Last week, I talked about the Wholehearted Parenting Manifesto. And I talked about how we might think of it in our closest relationships, our families, our friends, the people who we are most intimately connected with. And I was thinking all the time about what it would look like to take that manifesto out into the world, to try to bring it to every relationship we have with every person everywhere. If you were here, you recall that it starts with, in the voice of the parent, but you could imagine it in any voice, saying that this will be a place where you are loved and where you will know you are loved. And it ends with, you will be seen. There's a lot in the middle about joy and gratitude and making mistakes and making amends. But perhaps love and truly seeing each other are enough to think about as we go out and try to meet the world wholeheartedly. The author of that manifesto, Brené Brown, talks a lot about vulnerability and how living with greater vulnerability makes our lives more worth living. Which, of course, means living with greater risk and also having an emphasis on relationships all the time rather than being right or wrong. A teacher of mine said, "Our only real security is in relationships." And we hear that all the time now. Terrible things seem to happen all the time. And what gets people through is how they are connected to each other. A boy brings a gun to school, and it is the response of the community that keeps it from being a bad thing. A grown man shoots a policeman who has come to investigate the abuse of his father. The world seems wildly unsafe and unpredictable, and it is the relationships among our communities that hold us through these times. It is clearer and clearer to me that we can only live in the world if we embrace the painful uncertainty, accept that it is dangerous to live here, and walk out into it anyway, wholeheartedly. Brené Brown articulates what it means to live as if relationships are the only place we have true security, which means that this is the only place where our lives have meaning and significance and transcendence. When I heard a few weeks ago about the incident at the middle school, I'm being a little vague because we have some young ears here. If you aren't sure about the incident at the middle school, please ask the person sitting next to you. They almost surely can explain it to you. The thing that I got stuck on was that the young person said that they just wanted to show that they had easy access. And I have kept thinking since then, why would a middle school student want to show that they had easy access? Children, and it turns out most of us as adults, are mostly motivated by how we feel at any given moment. And often the times when we think we're being the most rational are the times when we're not. So I don't think that this young person really made a rational choice of any kind. I can only guess that he was feeling powerful, or that he felt vindicated, or that he felt excluded, or that he was trying to feel included, or one of those feelings that we all recognize. I don't know how he felt, and probably he doesn't really either. And so the question that I think we in the larger community are left to grapple with is, what is going on in the world? Not in the middle school and not even in that child's home, but in the world that surrounds that child, the world that surrounds that home, the world that surrounds this little town, in this small state. What is happening in the world that makes a boy want to show that he has easy access to weapons? And part of the answer, I think I've talked about before, this idea that we feel like we have to defend ourselves in this world, that it is a dangerous and threatening place, and that being powerful and able to defend yourself against those dangers is an understandable response to insecurity. And it's an insecurity that we all have to live with and have always had to live with. But this particular way of responding is catching like a virus. You know, when that stomach bug starts to go around and you sort of listen for who's gotten it next, it's starting to feel like that's happening with this particular response of violence. And I think, in fact, it is. I see it even in children's clothing. I look for clothes for my 15-month-old boy, and I could dress this sweet little bright-eyed boy in camouflage from head to foot, a little hat, full suit, little vest. I could have him look like he is prepared to go to war. He's just learned to walk. It's everywhere, and we're surrounded. And if we want it to be different, we will be pushing against the tide, which means that we will have to live it large. We will have to be louder and more present and more constant than the contagion that is everywhere around us now, that is bigger than any one incident. What would we do so that instead of a young person feeling like they needed to armor up to meet the world, we gave them the tools to be vulnerable, to say what they needed, to find the love that was missing in their lives, which isn't true for just one person ever. It's true for most people, that there's something that they need they're not getting, and we don't know how to ask each other for it. So what if that was what we decided? We as Unitarians, we as Unitarian Universalists, were going to speak up for in the world. That we weren't going to speak against something that we're pretty clear we're against, but instead speak up for what we want, to be in favor of something, loudly, presently, in a big and consistent way so that people couldn't miss it, so that it began to catch, like a great version of name your most dreaded virus, the good version of that. But if people are going to catch it from us, we have to go out in public and just spread it around. Which means that, just like in the meditation, we have to start in our own hearts and then slowly move that circle outward. And it's why I, in January, do you remember that bad dream of a month, January? You're trying not to. When I talked about the four deep purposes of church life and started with spiritual practice, is how we get this peace in our own hearts and lives so that we have it available to spread around. And then I invite you into considering a collective action, which is one of the other pieces that I talked about as one of the deep purposes of church life. This is reclaiming Mother's Day. So either before or after the flowers and the brunch, next year, I would like our congregation to create a Mother's Day walk for peace. Peace in the heart, peace in the home, peace in our town, peace in our state. But start here. Start wherever you can begin to think about creating peace in the world. Because each of the ripples connects to the next one, and you're working on the world when you're working on your heart. So next year, let's do a Mother's Day walk for peace, because that was the original meaning and purpose of Mother's Day. There were mothers, a whole bunch of different mothers, working together first on infant mortality, and then on the wounded soldiers from the war, and then on the idea that maybe no one should ever have to be in camouflage again, no matter how old they are. Maybe every child is too precious. Maybe every child is too precious to ever send them off to war. So I invite you to join me in putting together a walk for peace next May, when it's jubilant like this again, when we can, with big spirits and great singing voices, make a claim for peace in the world, not against anything, but for the deepest forms of peace, so that that might start to catch on, so that that might just break out in the news all over town. But we'll have to be joyful, as our choir sang this morning. We'll have to be insistent. We'll have to work against our own discouragement, which will be hard work, particularly in January, which will come again. But I do think that that is what we as religious people are called to do, to be a people of ultimate hope, meaning hope that is bigger than any one situation, bigger than any one loss, bigger even than all of the violence that has happened this year. We carry that hope for the world. So if you are ready to help start thinking about how bold and joyful and large we could make a Mother's Day walk for peace next year, let me know. We'll start planning now so that it will be irresistible by next May. Let's begin to walk and sing and dance for peace.